Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey, for getting us connected one more time. I'm laughing, ladies and gentlemen, because Mike, he likes to run on the treadmill and read, and he wanted to know if he could run on the treadmill tonight while the show's on. Well, of course not. I can't do that. Why should we allow you? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. And Johnny Cash, one more time, he takes us on that magnificent trip across the United States where he visits 90 cities and states. And if you ever had the opportunity, Johnny Cash, yes, sings that song from memory without looking at the lyrics. A remarkable memory feat. Mike and Emily, thank you. Mike, I'm sorry about that comment. Just kidding. Thank you for joining us tonight and for doing the news gathering for us. And Audrey, I think you're going to help us comment on some news a little bit later, aren't you? You're thinking about it. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show is we always like to discuss events, news issues, and developments in the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. Sometimes when the articles aren't supposed to be humorous, they are. I think I have a couple that fit in that category tonight. But this show, what we try to do to the tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and throughout the world. We tend to forget that not only do the federal agencies serve us worldwide, but we also have Army and Navy criminal justice professionals that serve us not in the United States and worldwide. And we also have local police now on various types of leaves and exchange programs where they're helping police officials in other parts of the world. We try to do the shows, look inside criminal justice practice and take a real close-up look at its professionals and how they do their job. And we're pleased to be able to do that each week. We're on Blog Talk Radio. It's a magnificent and magical system. Alan Levy's the chief executive officer of BTR, and you've heard me say many times now that you know, within the last 6 months, BTR has been identified as one of the top 100 websites in the world. Who knows how many million websites there are, but think of being in the top 10 in terms of hits and use. So that's magnificent that that has taken place. And they're right alongside sites like YouTube. My SEO network is that any person, interest group, any type of organization can have their own radio show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And the cost is absolutely free. every week. I won't tell you who's joined us this week, but if you just go to the BTR site, blogtalkradio.com, you'll see the little flashes there, the feature type of shows, the new people that are joining the network. Last week I commented on Tucker Carlson happens to be one of my favorite news commentators, and he has his own show on there now. So like it says on the back of that box of Cheez-Its, get your own box where you can get your own show with the Blog Talk Radio Network. The uses for this for organizations, service organizations, and educational institutions is virtually unlimited. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do another old-time radio show, and I know some folks like that and some folks don't. I've had comments. They say how they enjoy so much of these, but tonight we're going to talk about one that breaks history. I'll comment on that just a little bit now before we look at the news and have Audrey comment with her blonde joke. This is a show tonight called Retribution, and it's one of a series called The Whistler. And The Whistler started on May 16th in 1942. Can you count back or think back that far? May 16th in 1942. The show ended on September 8th, 1955. And Mike, how many I know you don't know because you weren't here earlier. How many segments do you think the Whistler logged over those years? Not even close. Audrey? That's close. She's close enough. 413 segments, a record-breaking radio show from 1942 to 1945, 413 segments. And ladies and gentlemen, you can get every one of those shows on archive.org. If you want to know how to find that on archive.org, I can help you, but you could probably go to archive.org and do a search in their search box, type in The Whistler, and you get 413 episodes from the very first to the very last, and they run about 29 minutes, 30 minutes and 12 seconds, something like that. So we're going to play one tonight, the first one that they ever did, sponsored by the Signal Oil Company, and you can get right on the website, you can get the cast of the characters, and even the woman who was the Whistler, that was Dorothy Roberts. Well, what you could do, ladies and gentlemen, on our show tonight, if you care to do that, you can call in on your computer with your Windows Media Player. I think you click on something like Talk, and then you can call in by phone for sure, and the number you call if you'd like to comment during our news segment is 347-996-5983. It's 347-996-5983. What we can do is hold five calls at a time. We can all talk to each other and converse and interchange ideas, and be sure to do that if you care to do that. All these shows are archived, by the way, within about 5 minutes after the show's over, so you can go back and look at our 150 shows, whatever. Some people do that. They use them in criminal justice classes, criminology classes across the country. I think some actually said they listened to it just as entertainment. When I went to a conference here not too long ago, I was surprised how many people talked about listening to the show that I had no idea they did. Audrey, I think you have a blonde joke all set for tonight, and we love the Easter joke last week where the guy hits the Easter bunny, but don't worry, the blonde had that can of hairspray, get it? If you missed the show last week, and everything was okay. Well, Audrey, how about our joke tonight? It's about what is it? It's about blondes building houses or something, isn't it? Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I should always preface our blonde joke by saying that Audrey is a blonde. She is from London, England, and since she was a small girl, she's been a collector of blonde jokes. So, Audrey, go ahead with our joke for tonight.
Professor Haley, the joke tonight is about two blondes trying to build a house, and they get into a controversy over the nails they are using in the project. I hope you and our listeners enjoy it. Here it is. Two blonde chicks were building a house together. One blonde was cutting the wood, and the other was standing on a ladder pounding nails. Before hammering in a nail, the blonde on the ladder would reach into her nail pouch, look at it, and either toss it over her shoulder or proceed to hammer it into the wood. The other blonde, confused, watched her do this, and after she could take it no longer yelled up, "Why in the world Are you throwing some of the nails away? Well, don't yell, the blonde on the ladder explained. If it's pointed toward me, when I pull it out of my pouch, I throw it away. If it's pointed toward the house, then I can use it safely. Duh. The second blonde became irate at this point, and started to call her all kinds of names, referencing how stupid she was, and how she was the reason blondes get a bad rap for being dumb. She explained the importance of keeping all the nails. Don't throw away the nails that are pointed toward you. They're for the other side of the house. Silly you.
Thank you very much, Audrey, for that joke. It is very difficult to build a house, and you can be confused about certain things. I'm not sure nails is one of them, but go ahead. Ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, and particularly at this time in American history when gun sales are up, someone said that the current presidential administration, the current president, is the best gun salesman that the nation has had for some time. Gun sales go up after every presidential election, I think. I'd actually like to study that and go back and see, but I've read that in newspaper articles, but they particularly up at this time. And so more and more guns are on the street, and we have some stories tonight about them going into Mexico and all sorts of other places, at least we think they are. And so what we're going to do tonight is play again the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms public service announcement in the interest that those who have bought firearms for the wrong purposes at gun shows or dealerships or stolen them in burglaries, they'll hear this message. I'm sure that's what this is directed toward, and they'll go turn in their firearms.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and we certainly hope that that message falls upon the right ears and that they take action. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's go ahead and take a look at a little bit of the news tonight, and we certainly have some interesting things going on. And one of these that I'm going to talk about tonight is a very noble project, and I'm sorry that this didn't work, but in the city of Philly, Philadelphia, today's tax filing deadline, well, that was on the 15th, of course, yesterday, is expected to come and go without a single company applying for one penny of Mayor Nutter's new $5 million tax credit program that was designed to encourage the hiring of ex-offenders. Isn't that interesting? He came up with this this initiative. He unveiled idea during his campaign. He said this would be an innovative way to drive down Philadelphia's crime rate. The city council wrote it into law about, it looks like about 18 months later, and local companies can receive tax breaks of $10,000 a year for 3 years for each ex-offender that works at least 6 months from the start of January 1, 2008. This is the first year companies would be able to receive the credits, but guess what? Not one person applied. Instead, a handful of businesses expressed interest, but they mostly balked at the program's requirements. One, that they be publicly identified. What do you mean? What do you mean? What's wrong with that? I mean, just because I hire, I have a home repair business and my workers come out to your house and I have to advertise that they're felons, maybe that would discourage some people from joining in. But according to Deputy Mayor for Public Safety, Everett Gillison, who oversees the initiative for Nutter, says they want to participate, these companies, but they don't want to be named. That sounds fairly understandable. He defends the program. He says, I won't say it's a failure yet. He says, somebody's got to get started. It's a baby that needs to be born, and we're doing it. He said the administration's effort to help former inmates adapt to society certainly is a worthy objective. And he said the greater challenge is to change the culture so that there's no stigma attached to hiring former prisoners. I've spent a lot of time a couple of decades ago, more than that, working with ex-offenders who were our students. We had about 25 a year for about 6 years, and I've talked to others in various places and assisted them in getting jobs, actually. And it's tough. If you're trying to go the straight and narrow, you get out of prison and you're looking for a place to work, there are certainly, or that certainly that criminal record comes up in front. And I was encouraging them to mention it right up front and don't try to get around it. And I can tell you that from a former student of mine in Texas who got a job at Home Depot, as a matter of fact. And they found out 6 months later that he had a felony record, and they got rid of him, and that was sad. He actually cried in my office, but things are worked out better for him later on. But anyway, it's an interesting program. One of the little aspects of it that some of the offenders might like, and some others don't care for, is that the ex-offender themselves has to turn over 5% of their paycheck to the city. And another little thing that might make it a little bit difficult, guess what? They have to pay 150% above the federal minimum hourly wage, which currently adds up to about $10 an hour. And for some of their union workforce, that's more money than they make. So I think they need to refine this. I understand the purpose of trying to give these offenders livable wage. Some of them have food bills, child report, child payments to make, custody payments, restitution, etc. But when you're starting out in an organization that has a union, and you're starting out two or three steps from the bottom, and all the rest of them started at the bottom, you can probably see why they might run into a little problem with this one. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I guess you finally saw, and aren't we pleased, answered prayer on the part of many people, I'm sure. But Our Somali pirates, I think the six of them that took the ship, were finally taken care of since I've spoken with you last. And they had some Navy SEAL snipers. I think there are three of them did the work, but three of them got shot, the Somalis, and they happened to raise their head. And that's one of the things that snipers have to have is a lot of patience, and they waited and waited and waited for that nanosecond shot that they had, and both of them were dead on target. And then the guy that had the, I think the AK-47 or some type of automatic weapon on the captain, he moved too. And what a mistake that was. The third sniper drilled him. Then, since I think it was yesterday, maybe even the day before, but another U.S. flagship has been fired upon by Somali pirates. Now, I don't know what the answer to this is. Well, I do know the answer. No one will pay any attention to me, but you know, maybe this we could make this a cruise ship experience instead of going, varmint hunting or something. And we could, have a cruise ship of people who want to go do a little sport shooting instead of skeet shooting or trap. They could go out hunting Somali pirates, and I'll bet the pirate experience would be cut down in almost no time. I know it's crazy. No one will take me up on that idea. Yeah, one of the things that's going on, President Obama, I think, was in Mexico City today, and he's moving on to, Barbados or somewhere. But anyway, they're worried about our guns being purchased in the United States, straw purchases, and then the guns being sold to someone, and those people cross the border and sell them in Mexico, and they end up in a weapon in this terrible drug trade, smuggling trade that's on the border. And there's a lot of controversy about this. They say a lot of these guns come from Texas and Arizona. Even name a couple of places, where this has actually transpired. But some people come back and say, look, even people with ATF-E come back and say, these guns are legal to possess in our country. And he says, if you stop me between the dealer and the border, I'm still legal because I can't possess these guns. The Mexican foreign minister, she's very mad about it, Patricia Espinosa. She says, talking to reporters, she accuses the United States of violating its international treaty obligations by allowing guns to flow into the hands of organized crime groups in Mexico. I wonder how many international treaty violations Mexico might be violating and allowing so many of their criminals that come into the United States to wreak havoc in terms of criminal experience here. And I think they could be what? They could be searching people on their side that come into their country and get some guns. But I'm sure that none of those 150,000 that have abandoned their military forces and joined the drug cartels. I'm sure that none of them had illegal firearms. And, you know, one of the commentators here says, look, he says, all these guns aren't, they don't agree with ATF's assumption that about 90% of these guns that these drug cartel people are using come from the United States. I think we commented on that last week. There was one little area where that occurred. He says they also had hand grenades, and they're not buying those in the United States for sure, but you know that illegal trafficking of firearms is not just from the United States, and it also comes in from other countries. You can tell by the weapons that are seized. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see how this this turns out. And some of these cartels, they can get money to buy guns whenever they want. He's the owner of Chuck's Gun Store in Brownsville, Texas. They have grenades, he said. They don't buy grenades here. So anyway, we'll have to see what happens on this particular issue. And I'm sure that the two presidents have discussed things of this nature. I know you'll find this as a surprise, but a new study came out by the Pew Hispanic Research Center, Pew Hispanic Center, and it says that the number of American citizen children who have at least one parent who is an illegal immigrant has increased rapidly since 2003. You say, no, that couldn't be. That couldn't be. About 4 million American children have at least one parent who lacks legal immigration status, and this has to come, folks from those who fell into the survey process. Let's don't even discuss those who can't be found by administering a survey. But the group found that then 73% of all children of illegal immigrants are American citizens. So can you say anchor, baby? Yes. One of the things that happens is that people come across the borders. And they have a child, and of course, the child becomes a citizen of the United States, and therefore, I don't think we're going to send mom and dad home, are we, and let the child stay? I think that's a great incentive for the immigration authorities not to send them back, or maybe not even to bother them at all. We'll have to see. They said about 3/4 of the nation's illegal immigrants are Hispanic. Children of illegal immigrants are more than twice as likely to live with two parents than children of the United States citizens, according to the report. That's interesting. Twice as likely. Interesting. In all, about 8.8 million people in the United States are in families that include parents who are illegal immigrants and children who are American citizens. Interesting statistic, something that will probably undoubtedly be looked at as we consider one more time, at least that's the plan, the comprehensive immigration reform bill. And folks have currently said, or this administration have said, that they're going to find a way for those who are here illegally now, unless they're, I guess, hardened criminals. I think the gang people could renounce their gang membership, though, and then get legal status the next day. Very interesting. I find this one kind of interesting. California has a problem in their prisons. No. I think they have about 670 plus. Am I wrong on death row? I haven't looked for about a month or so, but they have the largest death row in the United States, and mainly because they don't execute anyone. You've heard my line about politicians. They need to be tough enough to support the death penalty in order to garner support from the public, but they don't want to be mean enough to do it. And I think that perfectly describes California. Their prisons are bursting at the seams, and their death row is just enormous, by far the largest one in the United States. But something else is going on there. They're smuggling cell phones into prison. No, you say. They said that from last year, they took about 1,400 of these devices in 2007, and in 2008 had already increased to 2,800. And it appears the problem is getting worse. Well, why would somebody in a cell phone or in prison want a cell phone? Are they wanting to call their mom? Well, probably that and a little more. Some of them run drug businesses. Some of them set up HIT to eliminate their competition on the outside. And unfortunately, I guess part of the problem seems to be from prison guards who are certainly part of this smuggling ring. One prison employee admitted to the newspaper that he made up to $100,000 in 1 year by smuggling phones into the one prison where he worked. And inmates are willing to pay how much per phone? $1,000. So don't gripe when you pay $50 or $75 for your cell phone or $150. These inmates are willing to pay, who knows where they get the money, $1,000. Absolutely fantastic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, something else is going on in the United States. We talked about an issue where the homeless now are showing up in libraries at a greater rate than they were in the past. Anytime unemployment is up and conditions are tough on the street and it gets cold, certainly people hang out where they can, and some come in. I've seen them come in and actually read the newspapers and check out books necessarily, but look at books. But here in Schaumburg Township District Library in Illinois, they've got another problem. You're not allowed to bring noise into the library, but guess what? You're not allowed to bring in funk either. The library recently added offensive bodily odors to its list of prohibitions. Joining more traditional no-no, such as running, rowdiness, or toting an uncovered beverage. And what's happened is a lot of the homeless people have begun to stop in, and others in the library are complaining that, you know, they smell. And the answer is not showers, apparently. that would be an alternative. What they're going to do is they're going to restrict them. If they get enough complaints about one person who smells bad enough, they're going to be able to call the police and have them removed from the library. Kind of sad in one way, but another way, I think you could probably understand that. They also mentioned that they're talking about in a couple other of these libraries, that means strong perfume and cologne, too. So you could be thrown out of the library for smelling strongly bad or strongly sweet or strongly whatever from cologne. So what's next? This next news story I think will shock you. I don't think you would even guess this, but consumers who buy mini cars to economize on fuel are making a big trade-off when it comes to safety and collisions. No. An insurance group studied this, and they looked at three of these mini models. I'm not even sure. I know what a Toyota Yaris is. I don't want to know what the smart Ford 2 is. Ford 2? Is that right? And then the Honda Fit, all cars, but they fared poorly in collisions. By contrast, the midsize models in which they crashed fared well or acceptably well. Both the mini cars and the midsize cars were traveling at 40 miles an hour so that the crash occurs at the equivalent of like 80 miles an hour. Remember the car we mentioned last week, the new Puma that's going to be made by General Motors, the one that goes top speed, 35 miles an hour, and you get 35 miles off of one jolt of the charging of the battery. And I can't imagine how unsafe that particular car is. That's the one, if you're going to buy much, if you're out on a shopping trip, you better buy a little trailer for it because it doesn't have much room. But what a surprise to find out that you're safer in a larger car. And I think SUVs are certainly one of the safest, but soon you probably won't be allowed to make those anymore. Well, I had a couple other news stories. One of them is kind of interesting about states' rights, and it has to do with Montana. In order to get our show in, it's called Retribution, and it's the first in the series of the crime series, The Whistler. And I think you'll enjoy this this show. And if you like it, then guess what? You have 412 more that you can go to archive.org. If you can't find that, send me an email at keith@keithhaley.com, and I can help you with that. But tonight's show is called Retribution, and it's the first in the series, The Whistler, that ran 413 episodes from 1942 to 1955. Here we go.
Wait a minute. Have you heard The Whistler?
time to kill you. No.
That was John Hendrick. He waited. Waited for a chance to sell his soul to the devil.
Money is not enough, John. Money is not enough. We want you, John. We want you.
That was his wife, Martha. The former widow, Martha.
Yes, Mother. Yes.
And her simple-minded son, Henry.
Go ahead, son. Go ahead. We must have John Henry. Yes, Mother. Yes, Mother. Yes,
Mother. Tonight, CBS presents a new mystery series, The Whistler.
And I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadow. I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. And so I tell you tonight the strange story of retribution. Gaze up this muddy, rain-splattered road. A small, lonely stone building appears against the lightning-streaked sky. The dismal courthouse of a southern village. The village of Marsdenburg. It's nearly midnight. A trial is in progress. A murder trial. John Hendrick is on trial for his life. The state versus Henry. Killed his wife and stepson. He killed his wife and her simple-minded son, Henry, for the $10,000 in cash she kept in her big house on the outskirts of town. Open the door. There he stands, John Hendricks, a huge, silent man of 50, large, bony hands. Close the door. Well, what do you think? Does he look like a murderer? The prosecutor is closing his argument.
Ladies and gentlemen, jury, has been proven that Mrs. Hendricks had no current bank account. It has been proven that she did have a large sum of money which she kept on her estate. John Hendricks knew of this money and attempted to steal it, was caught in the act, and killed them both in order to cover up the theft. It was not a tramp who killed that old gray-haired lady and her simple son. There was only one intruder, one thief, one murderer. And there he sits, ladies and gentlemen. There he sits in all his guilt. A vicious killer, a murderer. There is only one decision for you to make. There is only one penalty that can erase from this countryside the stigma of this thievish crime. One penalty for this axe-murderer, John Hendricks. And that penalty is death. Sleep rest.
Verdict? Have you reached a verdict?
Your Honor, we the jury, due to lack of more complete evidence, find the defendant guilty of murder in the second degree.
Second degree. Cheated death. You get life. Surprise? Of course you are. But it had to be. Yes, it had to be. I know.
John Hendricks, stand up.
Yes, John, stand up. Face the court. Watch him now. He's on his feet.
John Hendricks, I wish to state that I am not in accord with the findings of this jury. However, there's nothing for me to do but sentence you to the state penitentiary for the remainder of your natural life.
Where you are now? Recognize that huge, sprawling stone structure with the high walls around it? State Penitentiary. How much later? 10 years. John Hendricks is in there. He has a number now. It is 1013. Let's go through the gates. Up the steps, down the corridor. Here we are in cell block 2. Night again. Just turn me.
Okay,
This has been going on for 10 years for John Hendrick, 1013, and his cellmate Bill, 1014. Bill, 1014, is a gangster, or rather, he was. But he's changed during 5 years he's been here. Bill has decided to go straight if he ever gets out, which is very doubtful. But he holds no resentment, has become more or less happy. Bill started reading here, philosophy and so forth. He's changed. But what about John Hendrick? Oh, no. Not Hendrick. Because he has a plan. He has a purpose. Move closer to the cell door and listen.
All I got to say, Billy, is I think you're crazy enough to make the try with me.
That's a matter of opinion, John.
But it'll be simple. I got everything all set. It's all fixed. Not a chance of a slip up.
All fixed? Who with?
Well, a friend of mine.
Oh, I see. Crooked guard.
No, he ain't a guard.
Don't tell me you got a fix with a warden.
What difference does it make who it is so long as the whole thing is set and fixed?
Well, you've got to have some help, inside or out. Oh, Hendrick, I think you're nuts. Stir crazy.
I'm getting out of this place. I got a reason, a good reason. I got something waiting for me outside, something I can enjoy, something that belongs to me. I'm the only one that knows where it is, and I'm going out. You're in here for a good long time, brother, and if you don't want to go with me, you can stay and rot.
Look, Hendricks, I still think you're nuts.
All right, what of it? I got the right dope, ain't I? And it'll work.
Suppose it does. Suppose you find this money hidden away on the old lady's estate. What good would it do you? You killed her and her son to get it, didn't you?
That's a lie. I didn't. Didn't kill anybody.
I say you did.
It ain't true, not a word of it. But I know where the money is.
Okay, you can break out. You can have the money, but... Well, I've done a lot of reading and thinking since I've been here.
Ah, you've gone soft.
Maybe so. But I know this much now. If I ever do get out, I'll do things a lot different. Believe me, Hendricks, I'll tread the straight and narrow. I've done a lot of things that I'm sure sorry for now. I can't undo them. But I won't do them again. No, sir, I'll do things different. Not the way I did it before.
You're just a religion, but it won't get you out.
Maybe not, but I'm resigned. I got exactly what's coming to me. And believe me, Hendricks, so will you. So will you. If you break out, they'll have you back one way or another. You watch and see.
Well, I'm going, so you watch and see. Watch and see.
Now, another storm. Another night, a lonely country road, a car. We're in the south. That village we passed a few miles back, that silent, sleeping village, was Marsdenburg. Yes, Marsdenburg, remember? That small, lonely stone building was the courthouse. The courthouse where John Hendricks was tried and convicted. We're on the outskirts now, on a lonely road. A young man is driving the old car, and there's a girl beside him. Motor trouble? Well, there, just ahead of light. Yes, it's a little crossroads store. Pull in.
There's a light, but I don't see anybody. Oh, it's closed. We'd better drive on.
I guess you're right.
Have evening, folks. Like to travel.
We're having motor trouble.
How are you doing here, driving around on a night like this?
On our way west. Mister, is there an inn or something around here where we can stay for the night?
An inn? Yes, there's a place about 8 miles up the road. They'll probably put you up. There's a sign on the left-hand side of the road. Can't miss it. This road's pretty bad when it rains. Gotta be careful or you'll find yourself walking.
Thanks. We'll try. Good night.
Good luck, mister.
You'll need the luck.
Muddy road sparkles in the flashes of lightning. The tall, dark trees sway back and forth in the fury of the storm like moaning, lost souls. The little car lurches and bounces in its fight to keep center of the highway. Two miles, 3 miles, four, maybe five, and look. There it is, straight ahead. On the right side of the road, a blue light. Ah, yes. That's it. Wait, George. Did the old man say on the right side? or the left side of the road.
George, what's wrong?
I don't know. The distributor must have gotten wet.
Look, George.
What?
That blue light we saw, it's gone. Where is it?
It must have passed it.
But we couldn't have. I was looking right at it. It seemed as though it just disappeared in the thin air.
I'd better turn in here. This motor won't last much longer.
Just so.
I can't see a thing.
No, it's...
Can you?
It's certainly a desolate looking place. There must be a house back in there. There it is. Look, there's a driveway. 20 feet ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, this motor's about to conk out. We'd better drive in and see what we can find.
Yes. Drive in, George. You'll find something. That's right. Through the gate. Make the curve. Hurry. There goes your motor. A little more. Now.
Oh, we just made it. Thank heaven.
Yes, that's right. Always thank heaven at a time like this. All right. Get out and go up on the porch.
Now let me help you.
Come on. What do we do with the bags?
We'll leave them here in the car till we find out if there's anyone here. Come on.
Do you see a bell?
No. Can't see a thing. Gee, this place looks completely deserted. I don't think anyone lives here.
I don't either. Let's go.
You're listening to The Whistler. We pause momentarily for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
George, let's don't knock. I don't like this place. Let's go on.
How, with a dead motor? Where could we go? I'll knock.
Well, all right.
Ah, that's right. Knock, George. Knock. Go ahead. Louder. Again.
Got to have shelter.
Yes, we can't stay in that car any longer. Can we?
No. Right not.
Here it comes. Now you're on your own, George. On your own.
There is someone.
Yes?
Oh!
Good evening.
What is it?
Well, you see... Our car...
Yes, our car stalled.
And we can't go any farther, and it's such a terrible night out that we thought we could stop here for the evening.
Stop here?
Why, yes, we saw your light and...
Light? What light?
Why, the little neon out in front.
There is no light.
Well, have you a room?
Yes, there is a room.
Well, could we come in? I mean... It's awfully wet out here.
You may come in if you wish.
Oh, thank you.
Well, this is quite a relief. We were afraid you'd close up for the night, especially when all the lights were out.
Are the lights out?
Yes, you see. Huh?
Of course the lights are out.
Oh, I didn't know.
You do take tourists.
Do we?
Oh, yes. That's what they told us.
Who told you?
Well, the man. The old man at the little store back at the crossroads.
Little store?
Yes. At the crossroads about 5 miles back. You know where the crossroads is, don't you?
There is no store at the crossroads.
There isn't?
No.
I see. Look, madam, would you mind turning on the lights? I can't see a thing.
We have no light here.
No light?
Give me a flashlight, here. She means there's no electricity.
No. There is no light here.
Well, throw the flash around. There must be a lamp.
No. Don't make a light. We see well in the dark.
We? Who's we? Is there someone else in the house?
My son.
Oh, he's gone to bed?
No. He's standing beside you.
Beside who?
You. Son.
Yes, Mother.
Oh!
Gee, give me that flashlight.
Got it. You got it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how long have you been standing there, Bub?
Since you came in.
That's so. Well, I didn't see you. You make a noise like a spook.
Who are you? What is your name?
George Kimball. This is my wife, Jill. We're on our way west with travelers.
Travelers?
So are we.
What?
Quiet, son. Quiet.
No, let him talk. He's quiet enough.
How long have you folks been living here?
We lived here all our lives.
How about closing the door?
Is the door open?
Why, of course it's... What?
George!
Now, take it easy, Joan. Don't get excited. Oh, look, madam, there's a candle on that table up at the fireplace.
Is there?
Yes, and if you don't mind, I'm going to light it.
Please don't.
Oh, wait a minute. If you want us to stay here, we insist that we have some light. You want us to stay here, don't you?
Do we? Do we, son?
Yes, Mother.
What are you looking at me for?
Yes, Mother.
Without light?
Yes, Mother.
George, let's go. I don't want to say goodnight. This place doesn't look good to me.
There's been no good here for many years.
You see what I mean, George?
Oh, I don't get it. You don't seem to want us yet. Your son does. How do you make any money that way?
We don't make money.
You don't? You mean you haven't had any guests lately?
No, not for many years.
Well, you can't expect any if you act like this.
But we do expect a guest. Don't we, sir?
Yes, Mother.
Well, he certainly has a surprise coming.
Yes, he has.
How many rooms have you?
There are many rooms, but only one.
Only one? That doesn't make sense. What do you mean?
Only one for guests.
You mean only one equipped?
Yes.
Well, and if you've got it reserved for this guest you expect, what are we going to do?
There is an inn farther along the road. They have rooms. They will take care of you. It will be best for us.
Our distributor got wet, so our car won't run.
Where is your car?
Right there at the foot of the steps.
I see no car.
You don't? Why, it's standing right...
George. George, where is it? It's gone.
Holy smoke, it is gone. Where? How? I didn't hear a sound. It must have rolled ahead. Well,
throw your light around.
Not a sign of it. Say, what goes on here?
Son.
Yes, Mother.
You move the car.
Yes, Mother.
I understand, son. I understand.
Wait a minute. Your son moved it? How could he? The motor won't even run. And even if it would, we didn't hear a sound.
No sound.
How did you move it?
I don't know.
Oh, that's a fine thing. Here we are in a place where they don't want us and no way of leaving. Well, you've got us on your hands now. You'll have to make the best of it.
No, George, no. We'll leave.
Nonsense. This is all silly. Come on, let's have some light and cut out the monkey business.
Wait. What have we decided?
Yes, Mother. We decided yes.
Very well. If you wish. If you wish, you may stay. Stay until...
Until when?
All night?
Yes, Mother.
If you wish.
That's better. That's more like it. Now I'll light this candle. There we are.
George. Look.
Going wrong. Look at the dust and the cobwebs. This looks deserted. Like an old cellar. Well, how about the room? Do we get it, or are the guests we're expecting?
There is another room that will do, perhaps.
Well, could we see it?
Yes. And by the way, how much do you charge?
We charge nothing.
You charge nothing?
Nothing.
Sounds silly, but it's right for us. We're running short anyway. Well, let's see the room.
Very well. It is upstairs.
After you, madam.
No. You go first.
Very well. Come on, Joe. Bring that other candle.
Come, son. Follow me.
Yes, Mother.
I never saw so much dust.
Well, they must like it. You know, nice clean dust.
That room at the head of the stairs.
Why? This room was well furnished. Is this the room reserved for your expected guest?
No.
But you said you had only one room furnished. Who sleeps here?
I stay here now.
I see. Do I?
It's a nice soft bed.
It was always comfortable. We'll leave you now. Come, son. We must leave them alone now.
Yes, Mother. Leave them alone.
Good night.
Good night.
You will lock your door?
Huh? Oh, yes. We'll lock it.
Goodbye.
Sonny, did she say good night or goodbye?
I don't know. I thought she said... She did say goodbye.
Golly, what a screwy outfit. I wish we hadn't had car trouble. That's what we get for trying to drive in the storm.
How much money have we left?
Not much. Just enough to get to Los Angeles the way I figure. But once I get there, I know there'll be a job for me. We'll make it, don't worry. You'll see me in a nice job in Hollywood.
I'm not worried about seeing you in Hollywood.
No?
No. I'm just worried about seeing you in the morning.
Same night, but later. It's midnight. Another car on the same road. You know who it is. It's John Hendricks. You know where he's going. He turns in at our deserted mansion, up the driveway, and stops. He steps out. Slips up the steps, opens the door, and throws his flash about the dusty room. Cobwebs glisten in the beam. A few moments, and the light comes to rest on the fireplace. He steps quickly to the mantel, draws a small hammer and chisel from his pocket, and sets to work removing a brick. Ah, now he's finished. The brick is loose. He reaches in and withdraws a heavy yellow envelope. He starts to put it in his pocket, but suddenly freezes in his tracks. He can't move. He turns icy cold. Turn around, Hendricks. Turn around. Look. At the foot of the stairs across the room stands a woman holding a candle. And beside her, a grinning youth holding an axe. Turn around, Hendricks. Look at their heads covered with blood. Turn around.
John Hendricks, murderer.
John Hendricks, thief.
What?
Yes, John.
Henry.
Yes, John.
No.
We've come for you, John, the same way you came for us. We've been waiting for you, John. We knew you'd come back for the money. We've been waiting. We've come to take you, John.
No, no. Please don't come near me. Please.
You must suffer, John, as we have suffered.
I've suffered.
Not enough, John. Not enough.
I didn't mean to do it. I didn't plan to kill you. I went mad, lost my head. No, don't come near me. You can have the money. You can have it.
Then give it to us, John. Give us the money. You won't need it now. Come, son. We must have the money, and we must take John. Come, son, come.
No. There's the money on the floor.
Money is not enough, John. Money is not enough. Go ahead, son. Go ahead. We must have John Hendricks, thief, murderer.
Yes, mother.
No.
Bullets won't stop us.
Lord George, what was that?
I heard a scream. Downstairs.
What did I? And stop.
I'll open the door. It must have been downstairs. I don't see a thing.
Here's your flashlight.
Great Scott. Look. A man down there on the floor. Come on. He's dead.
Look at the gun.
It's been fired. I don't see a mark on him.
Let's get out of here.
I'll say, come on.
Oh, you don't. Stand for yards.
George!
Cops!
What's going on here? Hand over that gun. Thanks. What are you doing here?
Well, we're stopping here. That is, we're just leaving.
I can see that. Know this man on the floor?
Know him? Yes.
Joan,
yes.
What's the matter with you?
No, we don't.
Take
it
away, Miss Frank. Yes, sir? What are you two doing here?
Why, we're guests.
Yes, we're both guests.
Guests? Who's guests?
Why, guests. Lodgers. Tourists. Guess of the old lady.
What old lady?
The old lady that lives here. The old lady and her son.
You'd have to cook up a better one than that.
What do you mean?
Drive here? Where's your car?
The son took it.
Son, old lady, what are you talking about?
They live here. They said they owned this place. We had motor trouble and they put us up for the night.
What about him, Frank?
Well, he isn't dead, breathing. Looks like he had a stroke or something.
It's him, all right. John Hendricks.
Take a look around. See if there's anyone else here.
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
George Kimball. This is my wife. We're on our way to California. Do you know who this man is?
Certainly. We've been on his trail. He's an escaped convict. This your gun?
No, sir.
Did he shoot at you?
No, sir.
You shoot at him? This gun's been fired, and we heard shots as we turned in the driveway.
Not a sight of anyone, sir. Nothing but dust and cobwebs.
Look, Campbell. You said there was an old lady and her son here.
Sure. They were here all evening.
They're not here now.
Well, they let us in and showed us to our room. They certainly were here.
What did the old lady look like?
Well, she had gray hair, wore a house dress and an apron.
What did the boy look like?
He was a big kid, about 20. Had a round, rosy face, and I think... Well, in fact, I know he was kind of simple-minded. He had a strange laugh, and he had red hair.
Well, I'll be darned. What do you think of that, Frank?
Golly, isn't me the creeps.
Why so?
You know who you've just described?
No.
The old lady and her son who used to live here.
Used to live here?
Yeah. They were murdered here 10 years ago.
What?
Murder? Sure. This man on the floor was her husband, the boy's stepfather. He was tried for killing them with an axe and stealing her money and bonds. He got off at second degree because of lack of evidence. He escaped a week ago and headed this way. We've been on his trail ever since he entered this county. So you see, Kimball, if there was anybody else here tonight, it must have been a figment of your imagination. This house has been deserted for 10 years.
Oh, George.
Good Lord.
Look, Sergeant. Found this envelope on the back doorstep. It's the money.
Well, what do you know? The money and the bond. Old Martha Hendricks' money. That's why Hendricks came here.
But where did they go? The old lady?
No place. Because they weren't here, Kimball. Well, better we get them out of here and back to headquarters.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't leave us.
We won't. You're coming along, too.
Why?
We need you for a day or two. All right, let's get going, Frank. Come on.
But where did they go? We saw them. I know they were here.
Well, you certainly described them to a T, but don't worry too much about it, you know. Things like this can drive you nuts. You know what I mean? Things like this, well, things like this sometimes just happen. You know what I mean?
No.
Well, oh, come on, let's go before I get the heebie-jeebies.
What did he say? Things like this just sometimes happen. Just happen? Well, sometimes they do and can't be explained. But not this time. Oh, no, not this time. This can be explained. Remember John Hendricks' cellmate, Bill? Bill number 1014? He can explain. He knows all about it. Because he planned it. Bill wanted the money. He'd learned all the dope from Hendricks. He sent his pals, the phony spooks, made up like the old lady and her son, to grab the money when Hendricks recovered it. Too bad they dropped it in their hurry to get away. Bill didn't want to hurt John. He wanted to scare him out of it. Remember? Bill, 1014, had changed. He said he'd never do things the way he'd done them before. And he didn't. Bill meant what he said. Good night.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the first episode of The Whistler called Retribution. You can see more of those on archive.org if you care to do that. There are 412 more 30-minute episodes. That's all for tonight. We'll be seeing you next week, and look on the show billing to see what's coming up. I think we're going to have something to do with music next week, if we can get it arranged. Talk with you later. We'll be seeing you again.
We'll meet again. Don't know where. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I